You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The World Cup with William Hill.
The Punt Daily Podcast. Listen at news.williamhill.com, on Audioboom, or subscribe by iTunes or your preferred podcast provider.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the Daily World Cup podcast brought to you by William Hill. It is the final round of group games on Thursday for the teams in Groups G and in Group H. Now, in terms of qualification, the picture is already clear in Group G, with England and Belgium both guaranteed a spot in the next round of the tournament. They'll be playing for top spots, but it's still all to play for in Group H as well, with three teams still in with a chance of progressing to the knockout stages. The games in Group H are 3 o'clock kickoffs, and the games in Group G are the 7 o'clock kickoffs. We begin with Japan versus Poland. Now, Japan were chalked up as the outsiders to progress out of this group, but they currently sit top of the group against Poland, who have been one of the bitter disappointments of the tournament. They're already eliminated after defeats at the hands of Senegal and Colombia, and the Japanese now just need a point to go through to the next round. So they've surprised many people, and providing they avoid defeat against Poland, then they will be going through to the round of 16. Mark Walton and John Gibby have taken a look at all of the matches for us. Let's get their thoughts on this one and see if they think Japan can progress to the knockout stages.
The prices for this one at the time of recording: Japan 6-4, the draw 2-1, Poland 2-1. And those prices make it look fairly level, Mark. I mean, Poland, I know, sort of quietly fancied by a couple of people coming into this competition, but been pretty disappointing so far.
Yeah, very disappointing. I actually thought Poland were almost guaranteed to get out of the group when I was looking at England's potential path through. I was a little bit worried about having to meet Poland potentially, thinking that, you know, they've got the absolute world class of Robert Lewandowski in there. They've got a lot of players that work hard, technically very good players. And this has been nothing but a massive disappointment for Poland. Japan have surprised a few people. They like to play nice football. Thinking of the prospect of England playing Japan, I think that would suit England, because they like to keep the ball on deck, like to play a passing kind of game. And obviously they're not the biggest side, so given how England have done with set pieces, I'd quite relish that proposition. So I'd like to see Japan finish in the corresponding place that means they meet England. I think they'll probably win this game as well. I think it is very tight, but Japan aren't safe. They need to win this game. Poland have got absolutely nothing to play for, apart from maybe a bit of pride. And I always feel if you're having a bet in a game where one team has something to play for and the other team doesn't, then invariably you've got to go with a team that has something to play for. I think Japan are quite an attractive price here at the moment as well. 6-4 about Japan. I thought they might even be potentially a little bit shorter than that. So I quite like the look of that in terms of an actual price. I think it's a great price, very tempting for this game. Japan have a good record against Poland as well. Only met twice and they've won both games. That was in 2002 when they had the home World Cup. Japan, we saw them turn out very impressive displays through that, of course, backed by a home crowd. And back in 1996, so that form really isn't very much used to us. But in terms of overall records, Japan have a good record against Poland. I fully expect them to go on and win this game, John.
Japan, I mean, I think we're already at risk of forgetting, you know, how they did against Colombia in their opening game. And Colombia, certainly the team I thought were going to win the group. I thought they were absolutely dead set to get out of the group. I mean, there's a small possibility, well, not small possibility, there's a very real possibility they might now not manage to do that, because it is so tight at the top of Group H. And yeah, I just think with Russia having sort of met their comeuppance against Uruguay the other night, I think I'd now consider Japan to be one of the major sort of surprise packages in this World Cup so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. My concern with Japan here and backing them is that Poland are quite a big physical side, and they've got players in there with good aerial ability, and that would concern me. Maybe you could look at the both teams to score angle here. So Japan to win and both teams to score is 4-1. I think that's quite a tempting price as well. Obviously a great story from the previous game with Honda scoring. He's the oldest player in the Japan squad, I think, or something along those lines, and he scored. He's always had that little bit of class, and he's played around Europe, and I'd possibly look at him to score again if he starts. He hasn't been starting the games, that's the problem. He's 11-2 to score first, and if you look at him to score any time, he's 19-10. I think he's the one player in the lineup that you kind of already knew his name before the tournament started. But in terms of a bet in this game, I would just probably keep it simple. I wouldn't try and complicate it by throwing in goal scorers or stuff like that. When you're getting 6-4 about a side that can qualify top of the group if they win against a team that are already out with 0 points, I don't think you look that gift horse in the mouth. I think you take the 6-4, and I think I'd side with Japan.
Japan at 6-4 for Mark. Then Honda potentially as a goal scorer to motor his way to the score sheet. Do you see what I did there, Mark?
I see what you did there.
Anyway, Japan the way to go for Mark here. Poland potentially to end a disappointing World Cup with even more disappointment as they take on the Japanese.
If you're betting on the World Cup on mobile, don't forget to get your bet boost. They're available on every match of the tournament. Just touch boost on your bet slip and the price will get bigger.
Also coming up at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon is the other match in the group between Senegal and Colombia. This one could be a straight shootout with a winner-takes-all scenario in terms of progressing to the next round. Senegal are in pole position to get through this one. They take on Colombia, who were impressive against Poland. We're going to hear the thoughts of both Mark and John on that one in just a moment. But first of all, let's find out a little bit more about the country of Senegal.
Welcome to Senegal, where the African Renaissance Monument is 49 metres high, or 161 foot if you prefer. The tall bronze statue is found on top of twin hills and is the tallest statue in Africa. Google it, it's very impressive. Don't be surprised if you get a taxi and it has a tail on it in Senegal. It'll be an artificial goat or sheep's hair tail, and it's supposed to bring good luck. Car B, translated as The Sheep, is one of the most popular TV shows in this country. It's a beauty contest for the most handsome ram in Senegal. Judges examine a balanced face, shiny coats, weight, and the symmetry of the ram's horns and testicles.
Senegal taking on Colombia is another game coming up on Thursday as the group stage of the World Cup comes towards its conclusion. And Colombia, who bounced back against Poland last time out, and now both these teams in with a chance of topping the group. Colombia very much the favourites in terms of the betting, though. Senegal 3-1, the draw 13-5, and Colombia 17-20. And after the scare at the beginning, when they took on Japan, Mark, it looks like Colombia's still in with a very real chance of, well, certainly qualifying, potentially topping the group.
Yeah, Colombia do go through. I am very confident about that. I think they win this game. 17-20 about them is probably fair. Senegal, whilst I like the way they play football, they're obviously a fast team. I like the way they seem to flood forward very quickly. And I love their warm-up. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch their warm-up pre-match. It's superb. It's better than my dancing, and it's their warm-up. So
that's not too difficult, is it,
Mark? It's not too difficult. That's absolutely nailed on. But I think they'll just probably come up short against Colombia. We saw in the first game they were a little bit disappointing, really, weren't they, Colombia? But the key thing there is James Rodriguez didn't start the match, and he started against Poland, and he just ran things. I mean, his record's quite brilliant, really. James Rodriguez has been involved in 10 goals in 7 World Cup appearances for Colombia. That's 6 goals and 4 assists. He just makes them tick, doesn't he? And then when they've got the likes of Falcao, who's suddenly back to his best again, they've got the pace in there as well of, plenty of... I can't remember his name. He played for Juan Cuadrado and those kind of players. I think that Colombia will be too strong here. I mean, you need to try and find a different angle in, I suppose, if you want to get a bit of value other than the 17-20. I think Senegal could hurt them on the counter-attack and maybe get a goal. So Colombia and both teams to score is 11-4. But I think it's all just focused around James Rodriguez. If you can find a way to find his goal scorer price, which I'm trying to do frantically at the moment. James Rodriguez, 11-2 to score first. For him to score any time is 19-10. I mean, if you're looking for an anytime goal scorer for Senegal, then Sadio Mane, the man that we all wanted to see have a good World Cup, he's 11-5. He scored goals as well, scored last time out, didn't he, as well? But I think that Colombia will win this. James Rodriguez on the score sheet. And I think we'll see goals here. I think overs on the goals could be quite a play because we've seen two exciting teams going forward. Over 1.5, the trade is very much onto that. That's 1-3, of course. But over 2.5 goals, even money. That way you don't have to put the result on it. Whilst I fancy Colombia, we could see Senegal upset the odds here. But either way, I think we see goals. I think even money over 2.5 goals is a great play here.
Even money for over 2.5 goals then for Mark Walton as a Senegal take on Colombia, the final group stage game for those two teams.
Can I just add something about the Sadio Mane angle as well, by the way?
Do you have a stat?
I have a stat. He scored against Japan, of course, last time. That's the 15th different match he scored for Senegal.
Senegal.
And they are yet to lose any of those. So if Sadio Mane is on the score sheet, get to the William Hill website and in play back anything other than a Senegal defeat. They won 9 of those and drawn 6 of them. He is their magic man, Sadio Mane.
So having just said you think he could score any side, but you don't think they're going to win the
game. Well, I actually said if you're looking for a Senegal player, I'd look at Mane, but I'm not looking at Senegal players because I'm leaning towards Colombia. But just to clear that up, John, before you try and make me look ridiculous. I think Colombia win. I think overs on the goals. But if you are leaning towards Senegal, put Mane in there, is my advice.
Strong advice there from Mark Walton. The Senegal take on Colombia in the World Cup.
The World Cup with William Hill.
We're live for every second of the tournament with in-place stats, best bets and updates from our World Cup reporters. Listen and bet at williamhill.com or on the app.
The World Cup on InPlay Radio.
On to the matches then in Group G, which round off the action on Thursday. And we start with what is a dead rubber. Two sides playing for pride. Panama taking on Tunisia. It's a battle to see who finishes in third in this group. Mark and John both taking a look at that one to see which two of these nations will finish in third.
Panama 16-5 off the back of their walloping against England. The draw 12-5 and Tunisia, of course, had a tough time of things against Belgium themselves last time out, 4-5. I mean, Mark, as we predicted coming into the World Cup, comfortably the two weakest teams in the group. Neither of them can come through to the round of 16. But which is the least worst team in the group?
The least worst team, I like it. This is not just the dead rubber. It's the deadest of all rubbers there's ever been.
What about Saudi Arabia against Egypt?
Yeah, but I like Mo Salah, so
that worked out well.
I had a little bit of an interest in there. With this, I was going to say I've got no interest in there, but I think this is actually my best bet of the entire day on Thursday. It is quite an interest. It's just because I've seen the price. I expected Tunisia to be shorter than 4-5. Panama are one of the worst teams I've ever seen play football. They're dirty. They've got suspensions because of the bookings they picked up against England. They offer very, very little going forward. They had that one or two half chances against England, but we saw that the quality up front is nothing. Shanking it like 20 yards wide when they're on the edge of the box. Panama offer absolutely nothing. And I'm not being mean in saying that. I think that's just a true reflection of how bad they are. At least Tunisia have shown that they are a goal threat. They've got Wabi Kazri in there who's got a bit of talent. And they are quite a difficult side to break down. You give me 4-5 Tunisia, and I get very, very excited, John Gibby. It's the best bet of the day.
Sounds worrying.
It's the best bet of the day by a long way.
So, Mark, apart from the fact you're not being mean when you say Panama are one of the worst teams you've ever seen play football, I assume you mean international level.
Yes, but it's not far off the worst, obviously. they've obviously done great to qualify, and it was a big thing to them. And you could see the frustration in them against England that they're just outclassed. They're very, very, like, hugely outclassed. And Tunisia are a tough team to beat. We saw that with England. We saw with Belgium, they gave them one or two little problems in there. I know Belgium ended up winning pretty nicely, but we saw that with them against Panama as well. They scored some really nice goals. And when they've got that prowess of just finding a goal out of nowhere, Belgium, and suddenly the game is killed off, I think the scoreline flattered them a little bit against Tunisia. I can't say strongly enough, John, that 4-5 is massive. And the win to nil as well, because I know Panama won their first game, scored their first goal, against England the other day, but they didn't offer much, did they? It was a nice finish when England had absolutely switched off because they were 6-0 up. So I would be looking, if you want to try and find a little bit of extra value in there, maybe go for Tunisia to win to nil. That is priced up at 21-10. But you've always got that risk that there's that little fluke that scuppers that bet. I mean, not a bet I like to play very often.
That is true with most bets, though, isn't it? If there's a fluke, then it could go down.
Yeah, but you can have a fluke in a game and the bet's not immediately dead. Obviously, with a win to nil bet, as soon as that fluke happens, the bet's dead. So maybe you could look at that. I don't think the difference in price warrants the risk, though. So for me, Tunisia 4-5, I am very, very strong on that.
Steady, steady for Mark Walton. He goes for the odds-on shot. Tunisia 4-5 to beat Panama in their final group stage game. It's a dead rubber, but there's still winning bets to be found. And hopefully we'll find you one.
William Hill customers are getting more every day of the World Cup. With flash odds, you can get outstanding price enhancements on some of the most popular markets. So don't miss out. More enhancements, more to celebrate. William Hill, this is more.
The biggest and best game of the day on Thursday, without wanting to show any bias, of course, sees England take on Belgium. Both these teams already through to the round of 16. And this is really a straight shootout between the two to see who's going to top the group. If there's a draw, it could potentially come down to fair play points. It promises to be an intriguing tussle. Before too long, we'll get the thoughts of Mark Walton and myself and the Racing Post team with their tips for this match. But first up, Mark caught up with Jason Burt from the FWA to have a chat about England, the game against Panama, the mood in the camp, and looking ahead to the match against Belgium.
Well, who'd have thought it safely through to the last 16 after just two games? We've scored 8 goals. Harry Kane is a top tournament goal scorer, and other big nations are failing to impress. Maybe, just maybe, football is coming home after all. It's Mark Walton in the studio here, joined by football writer for The Telegraph, Jason Burt. How are you, Jason?
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm on top of the world, actually. England actually look like a good side for once.
They do look like a good side, and it's so refreshing. And I've covered them at a number of tournaments, and you know, this is the most fun we've had, and fun isn't usually a word associated either with England or often the World Cup in terms of England's involvement. But I think, to be fair to Gareth Southgate, you said they would come and attack this tournament, and they've done just that. Okay, they've only played Tunisia and Panama, but it's the nature of the victories and the nature of the performances that I think has got people quite excited. And to be quite honest with you, whatever happens now, I think this has been a positive tournament for England.
Yeah, I think it's a big step up on what we've seen from England in the past. You mentioned that a lot of people are saying, yes, it's only Tunisia, yes, it's only Panama. But if I look at performances 3-4 years ago or previous World Cups and such, I still don't think England would have beaten Panama 6-1 like they did in this game. I think it'd probably be like scraping a 1-0 or a 2-0, not looking very impressive, and just been generally disappointing. This time, we've seen the England side actually put a team to the sword. You know, the kind of performances that you usually see Germany or France put in. England have started doing it. That's a huge step forward, isn't it?
It is a huge step forward. I mean, it's the first, the 6-1 victory of Panama, the first time they scored more than 4 goals or more in a World Cup game since the World Cup final 1966. And you're absolutely right. It wasn't just the margin of victory, but the nature of it. 5-0 up at half-time. And, you know, the game was over, you know, quite early in the first half. And as you say, we've been here so many times before where England have ground out a turgid 1-0 win or a 2-0 win. And, it's, you know, I think there's lots of games they've been involved with and you think, well, they'll easily, or they should easily beat these opponents, and they're incredibly hard work of it. And I think also it's about the atmosphere that's created. And, you know, the players have got a bit of a smile on their face at the moment. And, you know, Panama, OK, they're not the greatest team in the world, but they qualified for the World Cup ahead of the United States, and they're quite a rugged team, as we saw, quite physical. So they're not adverse to putting in a few challenges. And England dealt with that very well as well. I mean, they just put them away, frankly, and that's what you want to see in a World Cup.
In terms of positives from that game, then obviously Harry Kane scoring a hat-trick, first England captain to score a hat-trick since Alan Shearer back in 1999, I think. He's playing well, he's leading from the front, he's scored in every game he's been England captain as well. We've seen the likes of Lingard playing well, we've seen plenty of other players, you know, playing with a bit of freedom. I suppose the only question mark is around Sterling, that he hasn't quite got a goal yet, but he's, you know, I think he needs that for his performance to give him a bit of confidence. But on the whole, the England squad, a lot of players are actually playing their natural game, aren't they?
You felt a little bit for Sterling because that very, very good set-piece free kick where, you know, it's very short to Henderson who clipped it in, Kane heads it back across goal. That's clearly meant for Sterling, who met it, and the goalkeeper saved for John Stones to head home. It was a great training ground goal, and you just wish that Sterling himself had finished it because that was obviously intended target. But I thought he played some really nice touches against Panama. He played the role of that number 10 better. I thought he was dropping a bit deeper and linking play, and we saw that with the Lingard goal where he played a lovely ball into Lingard. But you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the players who really is impressing me at the moment, Kieran Trippier, was his delivery. I mean, his set-piece delivery, but also, you know, he's played the ball through for Lingard a couple of times, first against Tunisia where Lingard hit the outside of the post, then Lingard gets a penalty against Panama. He was incredibly potent, you know, a real attacking force for England. And Lingard himself, I think, has really come into his own. We've seen an awful lot more from him you know, he looks like one of the key players in that, that England team. But all across the pitch, you've got players who are, you know, not afraid to take risks, but also being encouraged to play an actual game. Gareth Southgate said something to us a few days ago, which has stayed in my head, and that's like, don't have any regrets here with England. You know, if you go for it, you make a mistake, fine. You know, it's more the kind of, don't go into this tournament and come out of it thinking, well, I wish I'd done this and I wish I'd tried that. And the fair play to the players, they're really well coached. They're really, really well coached. You can see that. And they're playing to a system which is working for them.
You sound like you're very impressed with Gareth Southgate. I think a lot of us have been as well. Is a lot of this down to him? Do you put it down to the way Gareth Southgate's approached the tournament? He seems very relaxed. I mean, even after the 6-1 victory, he was saying there were things in the performance he didn't like, but also took the positives as well. Yeah. He seems very balanced with it all.
Yeah, I put an awful lot of it down to Gareth Southgate. I wrote a lot before the tournament about the influence of Gareth Southgate, who I think is the boldest single manager since he's had since probably Terry Venables. He's a manager who's gone in there with a clear plan of action. He's taken some tough decisions. He's phased out some big-name players. He ended his international career of Wayne Rooney. He left out Joe Hart. He wouldn't pick Jack Wilshere. He went with the players he wanted. He changed the system after qualification. Said, we're going to go with three at the back. People were sceptical. He's done it. He stuck to his principles throughout. And he's created a really good environment. He's clearly benefiting from the fact that he was the England under 21 coach, and a lot of his players know him really well and admire him and look up to him. And I think he's got the balance right between being their coach and manager, but also being a little bit their sort of father figure, really. I think, you know, he's very good. We saw a little bit of that with the way he handled the storm over the Raheem Sterling gun tattoo, in which at the same time he defended Sterling, but also rebuked him for turning up late for the training camp. So there's a good mix there of actually being sympathetic towards the player, being very caring towards the player, but also quite tough as well. You know, I mean, he went for a walk with Sterling and told him it was unacceptable and that, you know, he was thinking of leaving him out of the team. So he's not a soft touch. And I think he's definitely become a bit of a star of this tournament, really. I mean, the press conference on Saturday before the Panama game, there was a sort of storm over the team sheet and whether it was a team sheet and whether or not the press should have reported it and so on. And he diffused that superbly to such an extent that there were journalists in that press conference from other countries who came up to me afterwards. And I decided to do three interviews. The foreign journalist who's just blown away by how impressive Gareth Southgate was.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the team sheet thing as well, because I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, you're involved in the media. There was the risk that maybe we've seen England teams and the media in the past clash, and it's kind of been them versus us kind of idea. It didn't get blown out of proportion. I thought that's another way that Gareth Southgate has handled this brilliantly. He didn't make it into a big thing. The performance on the pitch has justified his reaction, I suppose. And suddenly, what could have derailed an entire World Cup campaign maybe 4 years ago is just a nothing thing now. I mean, that's huge, isn't it?
It helped that it wasn't a team. I think, you know, it obviously wasn't a team in the end. But no, absolutely right. And I think he recognised that, because on the Friday he did a radio interview in which he basically said, you know, he basically said, media have to decide if they're behind us or not, if they want to be, you know, part. And that's not our job. You know, we're not cheerleaders. I know people say, oh, we're quite sniffing about this, but we are here to report. And reporting means being, to a degree, well, not to a degree, but being independent and impartial and writing the stories as we see them. At the same time, we hugely want England to succeed. I mean, people always say to me, oh, you just wait and sharpen your knife and stick your knife. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I've written 100 times before about England failures. I'm fed up with it. You know, I don't want to write about England failing again at all. I want to write about positivity. You know, from the media's point of view, if everyone gets behind the England team, you know, the viewing figures for the first two matches have been fantastic. You know, it's been brilliant. And obviously, you know, we want to report on success because it's good for everyone. And at the same time, I think Southgate recognised that it could become an issue. And one of the phrases I hate most in football is siege mentality. Let's create this siege mentality. No, you don't want to create a siege mentality, because that's when players start to freeze. That's when we get that bitterness and that sort of fear of playing and winning the shirt. You don't want any of that to happen. You want to sort of diffuse those sort of situations. You want to have a harmonious relationship with everyone in the media, and particularly play a big part of that. And it helps everyone relax. It helps the players relax. Southgate diffused that completely on Saturday. He killed that story dead. You know, he absolutely did. And that was really helpful for him, for the team, for the media, for the fans, for everyone.
You mentioned it. I think I agree entirely with you. And you've mentioned that you're with the England team now. You're at the England camp. Is it still very open, still very welcoming? Are you still getting plenty of access to the players, as we saw right at the start of the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of a myth has developed around the access. I mean, look, we get good access with the players, but it's not like we're sort of sitting there at the team hotel, you know, playing games with them and chatting them away, you know, hour. And I'm not actually been to their hotel. They come to, there's another hotel we go to, which is the kind of like the press conference hotel. So they, the media are based in one hotel, the team are based in another hotel, and we meet in a third hotel. So it's not like we're actually running around the team hotel playing charades with them or anything, you know. But I think that, you know, I think what there has been different this time is a more relaxed atmosphere in terms of the players being encouraged to talk to us, the SA's own media team being very open and helpful and allowing players to talk. There's not that sense of, oh, what you're telling the media, let's don't tell them this, don't tell them that. One of the big things that blew up in 2016 at Euros was this ridiculous story about how we were just desperately looking for something and the players are having a darts competition and one of the journalists asked, you know, who's winning the darts competition, and they refused to tell us, and it became a running theme. I think Joe Hart played a big part in it. They became a running theme, don't tell the media who's winning the darts competition. One of the things that's happened here, if they won, the players are playing darts with the media. And I think it's almost like an in-joke from the SA, and I think they've handled it very well. You know, daily, when they do their media, they have a little sort of free dart challenge with a journalist. Unfortunately, the players are winning that at the moment. But it just sort of starts off the sort of media duties in a more relaxed manner.
The players look relaxed out on the training pitch. Do we look like we're ready for Belgium?
They do, yeah, absolutely. As I say, it's the most relaxed and happy camp I've ever witnessed as an England reporter, and I've done it for, as I say, a number of years. There is not the tense atmosphere. There is not the sense the players aren't smiling, enjoying this. I think it helps also with the young group of players. We've got a lot of new faces in here who are embracing the World Cup. And what's also interesting, they've been encouraged to tell their stories of how they've got here. And you've seen, for example, Harry Maguire 2 years ago was a fan at Euro 2016. The same group of lads who he was traveling around France with then are over here in Russia. And he went over and sought them out after the game against Panama for a picture. So they're all being encouraged to sort of talk about their sort of backgrounds, their relationships and friendships and so on, and the families, and, you know, embracing it much more as an experience. You know, some of these guys have to be a one and only chance at the World Cup, you know, and I'm sure there are generations of England players who look back on their careers and thinking, what was all that about? I went to the World Cup, it passed me by, I didn't enjoy it, and I really regret that. And I think that's a real key message that Southgate's got across to these players, that look, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And again, you know, go back to Gareth Southgate himself. He missed a penalty in Euro 96. That's still, the scars are still there for him. But he's using that as a motivation. And he's saying to the players, look, I went through all that. That's the worst that can happen. I've come through the other end. And look, I'm the England manager. So, you know, it's only football. Let's just enjoy it and embrace it and enjoy it as an occasion for England to be better in. And I think, you know, all of that will help because we've got the ability. This isn't a bad team. And there's no outstanding team at this World Cup. England can do well. I don't think they're going to win it. I think the better teams here than them to win it, but they can go deep into the competition.
Okay, well, we'll get your thoughts on how deep in the competition they can go very shortly. But just turning our attention to that Belgium game, England 13-8 in the betting, the draw 2-1, Belgium 15-8. There's stories that England, that Gareth Southgate may be making plenty of changes for that match. Any more on that? I think somebody's mentioned as many as 6 changes, perhaps?
Yeah. I think it's a balance to be struck. What's interesting is Belgium will make even more changes. I think Roberto Martinez is talking about making 10 changes. Although, at the same time, I think he's got a couple of players, a couple of big-name players in Hazard and De Bruyne, who are desperate to play. I don't think Lukaku will start. I think it will be Michy Batshuayi. But with England, yes, I think there's a balance to be struck between changing the team, give some players minutes. And again, going back to Gareth Southgate's own experience, in the World Cup in 2002, he sat on the bench for all 5 games. He didn't get a single minute on the pitch. And he's not forgotten that experience either. And that was difficult for him. He doesn't want players out here to have that experience. He wants them to be involved as a squad and to get on the pitch. And already, interesting, England have used 16 players in their first 2 games. And what's also good with this England squad is, let's be frank, I mean, they're much for much in terms of the players. And we went into this tournament thinking, will it be Jordan Henderson or will it be Eric Dier? Henderson has been absolutely outstanding in 2 games, so clearly he will now be first choice. But if Eric Dier comes in against Belgium, you don't lose an awful lot. You know, he's arguably should have been in the team anyway. And you can go throughout the whole squad and say that. I think Kieran Trippier has suddenly become an incredibly important player. He's got a slight injury. I think that right-hand side is a little bit of a problem because do you go with Trent Alexander-Arnold or do you push Ashley Young across the right-hand side and play Danny Rose? I think there will be as many as 6 or 7 changes. But the interesting one amongst of all will be Harry Kane, because I think Gareth Southgate will have quite a difficult situation to try and persuade Harry Kane not to start against Belgium. And at the same time, he'll think, well, look, this is a guy in form. Goal scorers, strikers score in clusters. He's got 5 and 2. I think the ideal scenario is he starts against Belgium, he gets another goal, and he comes off after maybe 45 minutes or an hour, and he keeps that momentum going, and we see Jamie Vardy coming onto the pitch.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. Obviously, Harry Kane will be in Gareth Southgate's ear, I'm sure, saying, I'm on for the golden boot here. Let me play. Ideal scenario is he scores again, and then we get to wrap him in cotton wool for the last 16, of course. You mentioned a few names in there. Any others that you think might get a go out here? I mean, we haven't seen Vardy start, as you said. Dyer's not had any time on the pitch just yet. Any others that you think might be included here? I mean, what's the news on Dele Alli? Is he fit yet? And players like that? Will we see Rashford maybe come in?
Yeah, Dele Alli trained yesterday. I think he will come into the team. Obviously, he started one game and missed one game, so he probably needs another game. So that would be quite a good move to bring him in and maybe rest Lingard. There'll be a decision over whether or not to play Loftus-Cheek or Fabian Delph. Delph's situation is complicated somewhat because obviously his wife is due to give birth any day. So it's hard to pencil him into a team and then suddenly he rushes off back home. I think at the back, we'll probably see Gary Cahill come into the team. He's been very patient again, a senior player. He hasn't had any minutes on the pitch. I think again, Southgate was very aware of the similarities to his situation and Gary Cahill's in 2002. You won't want Gary Cahill not to play in this World Cup. So I think Cahill will come in. And then it's a question of how much do you change that defence. Walker's interesting because he's still sort of learning that position. So I wouldn't be surprised if Walker stays in there, Stone stays in there, Pickford stays in there. So I think that you know those three and Kane probably will play. And then further forward, I think Marcus Rashford, very, very close to start in the last game against Panama. Impressed in his last few appearances for England. He's probably unlucky not to be in the team, so I would be surprised if he doesn't get a start as well. So, as I say, I think we could see as many as six or even seven changes, but I don't think that's a fancy weakness of England squad because you know a lot of the players are fairly interchangeable anyway.
We're obviously not seeing any shortcomings with goalkeepers at the moment as well, which is a nice refreshing change for an England camp. There was a lot of talk before the tournament who would start as England's number one. Obviously, Butland has been sat on the bench. Do you think we might see him make an appearance here as well?
No, I don't. I think he'll stick with Jordan Pickford is still relatively inexperienced and you know he needs to gain that authority in goal. What was interesting against Panama was how furious he was with the defence that he conceded the goal right at the end. He wanted that clean sheet, so that's a good sign. You know, he was desperate for a clean sheet. He looked like in a face like thunder afterwards in the mix zone when he walked past us. He wasn't happy at all, even though he'd won 6-1 but he conceded a goal. And that's a good sign. I think we've got a goalkeeper there who is, you know, not afraid to berate more experienced older players than himself. And because he has those skills with his feet, I think he will probably stay. And I don't think, you know, it's a time to start chopping and changing the goalkeeper. I think that's one position where England, you know, he's made his decision. I think Pickford is the number one. Butland's been unfortunate, but Pickford is the number one. I think he'll carry on in goal.
OK. In terms of result on Thursday night, do you think England win the game? Do you think they top the group? Do you think they get the draw that they need maybe and don't get any bookings or whatever? It's obviously on fair play at the moment, so...
It's really tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, obviously, I think they should go out and get the win. I think they quite possibly will get the win. I think there'll be a lot of goals. I could see it being 3-2 or something like that. However, you know, in some ways, it would be even more ideal if they drew the game and finished second in the group, maybe picked up a couple of yellow cards, because the route then after that is better further forward into the competition. One half of the draw has suddenly become much more tricky when you've got Germany and Brazil and France in it. Another half of the draw, when you're looking at you know Denmark and so on, other countries where perhaps you know England would stand a chance against more. But Gareth Southgate has been quite clear, as he has to be, and as is right, he's saying it's not England, it's not the mindset to go into this game, not trying to win it. I think, you know, with a young team in particular, you're talking about momentum, you're talking about confidence. And also, what's quite interesting is, you know, it's an awful long time since England had a big scalp at a major tournament. You're talking 2002, Argentina in the group stages when England beat them. Since then, they haven't beaten a nation really ranked higher than them. And obviously, Belgium are third in the world. Okay, they may play a shadow team, but it will be a big scalp for them if England could beat them. And that would help confidence, whoever they face in the next round.
Okay, so you think a lot of talk about where England should try and finish. You think they'll just go there trying to win and winning breeds winning kind of idea for England?
I think you can't second-guess these things. I think you get into all sorts of things if you do that. I think, obviously, the Euros in 2016, England played a weakened or a changed team against Slovakia. It was a terrible goalless draw. They lost a bit of momentum because of that. But then they drew Iceland and everyone was thinking, oh, great, they've got Iceland. But actually, they'd stalled their own momentum by they beat Wales dramatically. Then they had that terrible draw. Then they went into the Iceland game thinking they'll get through that. I think you can't second guess. I think you really have to. England aren't an experienced enough or a big enough team to start plotting their route to the final too much. I think they have to almost take it each game as it happens and see what happens after that and see how far they can get into the competition. I think that's the right strategy because you're messing with the players' minds otherwise. And as I say, they haven't got that sort of experience or that sort of streetwise approach that some of the other nations have because they've been here before. England, this is a new experience for a lot of these players, and I think you've got to enjoy it and try and win every game they play.
Okay, final bit that I just want to talk to you about. We've got some special England team markets on the William Hill website as well. Top team goal scorers, done and dusted really, isn't it? 200 to 1 on for Harry Kane, so we don't really need to talk about that market. But stage of elimination, last 16 is 7-4, quarter-final 7-4, semi-final 7-2, runner-up is 8-1, and if you dare to dream, England to win the World Cup is 10-1. How far do England go under Gareth Southgate?
I still think quarterfinals, unfortunately. I think if they do come up against Brazil or Germany, I think they'll have a little bit too much. What worries me a little bit about this England team is if I'm a coach playing against them, I think I know how to stop them. You basically attack them down that left-hand flank, you get at Young and Maguire, and you stop Kieran Trippier getting forward. And I think the first team that do that against England will get a lot of joy. So that's what I'm worried about, because one of the bigger nations will be able to do that, and that's when England might come a little bit unstuck, because we do lack a little bit of creativity and we do have a little bit of inexperience at the back, and I could see, you know, that being a problem for them. In saying that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they do go a bit further, and wouldn't it be amazing if they got through that quarterfinal and get into the last four, and then goodness knows what would happen. I've come to many tournaments before with England having better teams than this and never really believed they would get that far. I look at this team, this environment, this manager, and think, well, why not? You know, they've got an opportunity to do something special here. As I said already, there aren't brilliant teams in this tournament. There are better teams in England, but not substantially better. And they might just do that maybe for once, England will get the rub of the green, and it might go against them. I would love England to beat Germany in the quarterfinals on penalties.
I think we'd all love that, but even this team hasn't got me quite that optimistic just yet. But I like, you know, maybe not on penalties. Maybe we'll sneak through in 90 minutes. Good stuff. So maybe quarterfinals at 7-4 if you think we can get further. 7-2 for the semis, and then you are dreaming runner-up and winner 8-1 and 10-1 respectively. Thank you very much, Jason. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Very best of luck with what's coming up, and enjoy the rest of the tournament in Russia.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
William Hill customers are getting more every day of the World Cup. With flash odds, you can get outstanding price enhancements on some of the most popular markets. So don't miss out. More enhancements, more to celebrate. William Hill, this is more.
By the time the game rolls round, the two sides will know whether or not it's better to finish second or first. They're currently locked together with the same number of points before kickoff. They've got the same goal difference as well. Goals scored and goals conceded are both level. After that, it comes down to who has received the least cards in the tournament. England, before kickoff, are currently heading that particular battle. We'll see which one of these tops the group come Thursday evening. We'll hear the thoughts, first of all, from the Racing Post team on this England-Belgium match before we go back to Mark and John for their thoughts on the England-Belgium game.
Hi there, it's the Racing Post World Cup betting preview. I'm Bruce Millington. And I'm asking Mark Langdon and Dan Charles to solve a very tricky question. Who will win out of England and Belgium when they meet on Thursday at 7 p.m.? By that point, we'll know the teams and we'll know who they've got to, what they've got to do to try and avoid the hardest game in the round of 16. But right now, Mark, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you said they're a hard question. I find it impossible. So I'm going to swerve the match markets, head to the both teams to score. And I think this is going to be high scoring. I mean, England have already conceded to Panama and Tunisia. Belgium didn't look very good, conceded twice to Tunisia defensively. We know there's going to be changes. I think it's going to be a relaxed game, plenty of goals.
Dan, potentially England reserves v Belgium reserves. Yeah, who do you like?
That's the way I'm looking at it. And I think Belgium rely a lot more on their star players, the likes of Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku. I think England's backup is a little bit better, and I'm going to go for England to win the game.
OK, should be a very interesting game. Don't forget, we are back with more great betting advice throughout the World Cup.
The World Cup with William Hill.
We're live for every second of the tournament with in-play stats, best bets and updates from our World Cup reporters. Listen and bet at williamhill.com or on the app.
The World Cup on in-play radio.
England 13-8 to win this one at time of recording. Draw is 2-1, Belgium 15-8. Mark Walton joins me, John Gibby. Comfortably the two easiest teams in the group here, Mark. And off the back of that win against Panama, you'd expect England to be brimming with confidence coming into this one.
Absolutely. It's coming home, isn't it, John?
Yes.
Football is coming home. Because, obviously, aside from this game, we've seen England play very well. We've seen Belgium play quite well. You look at the other big teams in the tournament, and nobody's really impressed me to the point of me thinking, oh, I won't want to meet them. Obviously, when you get to the later stage of the tournament, your Brazils, your Germanys, your Croatias, it seems, in this tournament.
And you have just told me that Panama are one of the worst teams you've ever seen play football. So if we hadn't won by a considerable scoreline, it would have been pretty disappointing.
I've heard a lot of people saying this argument about Panama being terrible and England have beaten a terrible side 6-1, not to get carried away. But the reason I am getting carried away, John, is because 4 years ago, if England had met Panama in a World Cup, we'd have sneaked somehow a 1-0 or a 2-0 win. It'd have been laborious, it'd have been dull, it'd have been terrible. But they got the 3 points, it's the same outcome, I know. But England wouldn't have looked good doing it. This time, England looked very good. They played nice football. They didn't get rattled by the Panama tactics. They scored plenty of nice goals. They played nice football. Some of the goals were brilliant. You know, at times well worked. Set pieces, we looked good. It's a very, very different England side to what we've seen recently. And I am getting carried away wholeheartedly. 10-1 to win the World Cup, by the way. I'm almost getting that excited and putting many, many pounds on England to win, 10-1. Although we do promote responsible gambling, of course. And backing England to win a World Cup has never, ever been responsible. In terms of this game, England are going to make changes. There's talk of 6 changes, perhaps. I think we'll see Harry Kane start, because I think he'll have been in Gareth Southgate's ear a little bit about, I'm on for the golden boot here, let's maybe start him, see if he can get a goal in the first 45 minutes, take him off and wrap him in bubble wrap and cotton wool and make sure he's perfectly fine. Sterling's an interesting one because he's getting criticism, but I thought he played well in patches. If only that header had gone in for him. I think Sterling with a goal is a different animal, and I think maybe Gareth Southgate might play him to try and help him get through this I won't say wobble, but I think he just needs a goal. But I think we will see changes. I think Henderson might come out and give Dyer a run out. But if you'd asked me before the tournament who I think should play, I would have probably gone with Dyer anyway. Don't get me wrong, Henderson's been brilliant in his 2 games. So I don't think that weakens the side. I think the changes that England will make aren't massively different because they are kind of similar level players. We're not taking a superstar out for a player that's a fringe player. We're swapping and changing similar kind of players. And I think that bodes well for England. I think Belgium are going to make more changes than England. And for that reason, I think I'd be leaning towards maybe England nicking this. I think they go there. I think what they're saying about the attitude is correct. Go there to win the match. Don't go there to try and play for a draw or play for a defeat to finish second in the group and get a potentially easier run through. So I think we'll see England go for this. Obviously, England sit top now on virtue of fair play. So I don't think there'll be anything to do with that. I don't think we'll play for a draw and then 2 yellow cards or anything like that, which some people have seen people suggesting that as well. But I think, I'm looking forward to seeing England because we haven't had a performance at a World Cup which can really hold on to. Like you say, Panama, we should be beating Panama. We should be beating Tunisia. We get beat by the better sides in recent years. If we beat Belgium, that's an actual big team that England have beaten in a World Cup, and suddenly then you can start saying there's a bit of credibility to the idea that England are going to do well in this tournament. They've got a great record against Belgium. 21 meetings between the sides, and England have lost only one of those, and that was all the way back in 1936. And I don't think it changes. I don't think Belgium win.
So England to win here. Is it just a straight England to win selection here?
Yes. England to win 13-8. Nice price. England to win and both teams to score 9-2 because Belgium carry a threat. England, we've seen, fall asleep a couple of times. Whilst I hope they don't do that against Belgium because they will punish them, I think there is still that little bit of vulnerability at the back. I think we'll see changes there as well. I think probably Gary Cahill will come in, which just unsettles the defence very slightly. I really like the look of England to win and both teams to score at 9-2. It's massively led by my heart rather than my head. But I still have enough of the head saying, OK, they might win.
And that concludes the World Cup action and indeed concludes the group stage on Thursday with both Groups H and Group G to be sorted out throughout the course of the day. Thank you very much for listening to this daily World Cup podcast, and we'll be back for the knockout stages.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.